there is a bigger percentage of people who really are doing the work, meaning really thinking about how they're showing up and if they're showing up how they want to be, and understanding that if they want things to change, they need to change.
Welcome back, friends. Episode 107 of Future Proof. This is I'm Bill. I'm your host, by the way. And look, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. We've got some stuff to iron out this week. All of us do. I mean, geez, where do I even begin? Let me think about that for a second. While I'm thinking, let me take a minute to let you know that this week's show is brought to you by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. All right, back to where do I even begin? Mindset, I guess, is the answer. Our mindsets these days are, what's the word? Precarious, I guess, is as good a way to describe it as any. Where we're all coming from these days, what we're all dealing with. So every meeting we have at my place of employment, the MACPA, and the Business Learning Institute, anytime teams get together, we always start out with what we call a check-in, right? It's simply good news. What's happening in your life personally, professionally, that's good? We go around the table. Everyone gets a chance to tell us something that they're dealing with that's good. It just kind of sets the tone, right? And gets the meeting off on the right foot. And at one of our meetings recently, a colleague of mine started his check-in basically by telling us all how miserable he's been lately. He just hasn't been in a good place. And you know, it's not just him, right? We're all kind of feeling some of this these days from time to time. This guy had just had the guts to tell us, right, what he was feeling. And what he was feeling was, you know, down. This virus and these protests and just the general feeling of us versus them that exists in this country these days. And the fact that we've got an election coming up that's going to just inflame all those feelings, you know? Every single time I open up Facebook or Twitter, I fall down this hole of despair almost. There's just so much hatred out there, so much, and people who shouldn't be hating one another. You know, I mean, I went to school with some of these folks. I'm related to some of these folks, and they're making my blood pressure spike. And you know what? I'm as guilty as anybody. I get sucked into that well of negativity over and over, and sometimes over again. I try not to, as God is my witness. I try like hell not to, But you know, I mean, we've all been there. We've all gotten pulled into that negativity vortex and added our own brand of misery to the mix from time to time. And then the question then is how do we crawl our way out of that swamp? Because that's exactly what it is. It's a swamp, folks. It's a teeming pool of quicksand. And if we're not mentally prepared to deal with it, it'll suck us down. And you know, we might end up taking a few people down with us. And man, we can't live like that. Life can't devolve into that kind of world, can it? And the answer, I know, the answer is yes, it can, but it doesn't have to, right? We can train ourselves to be more positive, or at least have a better mindset to not necessarily ignore the negative stuff, but to focus more on what's good in our lives. Barbara Fredrickson, she has a formula for this stuff. She's a professor of psychology at the University of North Carolina. And she's one of the pioneers of this fairly new field of study called positive psychology. And she's written a book on the subject, if you're interested. It's called Positivity: Discover the Upward Spiral That Will Change Your Life. Anyway, her formula, it's this. It's 3-1. Right? Negativity is such a powerful force, a powerful emotion. And we tend to kind of default toward the negative a lot of the time. And to overcome those negative emotions and to thrive, we have to counter each negative experience with 3 genuinely positive experiences. And by positive experiences, she's not talking about that kind of Pollyanna-ish mindset of people who will just tell you to smile more or to look on the bright side, right? That type of false positivity is what Barbara Fredrickson would call toxic insincerity, right? It's not real, and sometimes it can do more harm than good. And instead, what she's talking about here is real, genuine moments of positivity. Here's what she says.
One of the things that I think is very useful, knowing the reciprocal causality that runs between the mindsets of positivity and positive emotions themselves, is to lightly create the mindset of positive emotions, and from that, positive emotions follow. In particular, being open, being appreciative, being curious, being kind, and above all, being real, being sincere. These are strategies that from them spring positive emotions.
And this stuff isn't easy. These positive moments don't just appear. We have to intentionally seek them out. So anyway, kind of a long-winded setup for this week's conversation. With everything that's going on, I wanted to spend some time on positivity because I do think it's all related to this idea of future readiness. I think it's important. I wanted to talk to somebody who could shed some insight on all this, maybe offer a few tips about how we can increase our own personal positivity ratios, so to speak. And I found someone. She is Gretchen Pisano. Right? Gretchen and I go back a ways. She and my boss, Tom Hood, have been the primary instructors and discussion leaders for the AICPA's Leadership Academy since they designed the program in 2008. She and Tom have developed a strategic thinking system called Insights to Action, which is basically strat planning that results in specific actions, adding a little traction to the vision, so to speak. But more to the point for this conversation, Gretchen is co-founder and CEO of P-Link Leadership. Now, this is a group that combines strategy, leadership development, and coaching with a focus on the link between the practice of positive psychology and better business results. And she's a professional certified coach. She has a master's in applied positive psychology. She's a student of the teachings of Barbara Fredrickson and Brené Brown. And really, there's no one I'd rather have this conversation with than Gretchen. This talk was just a breath of fresh air in what has been a tough few months for me personally. And I think we've all dealt with our own struggles recently. There's something in this conversation for everybody to help us all not only feel a little bit better, but to actually thrive. And wow, wouldn't that be awesome to figure out how to do that in this environment? So I appreciate you all being here. I think this is well worth our time this week. Here is my conversation with Gretchen Pisano. So Gretchen, it's been a while. First question, how have you been? How's 2020 been treating you so far?
It has been a while, and I would say overall, I have been pretty well. I think as well as one could expect. And I think part of that is due to, a real practice of hunting the good. So kind of holding, right, the dualities of all the hardship that 2020 has brought, as well as the kinds of opportunities that come with huge change like this.
How do you hunt the good?
Well, so very specifically, I think there are a couple things. One, I would say that in our team, which is 100% virtual team, and we were 100% virtual even before COVID-19, we really do have a practice of hunting the good. So we actually have a Slack channel called Kudos and another one called Random, where we share good news. And, there's a whole process around that called active constructive responding, where people are intentional, right, about responding and celebrating the good news and really allowing it to become a shared experience. Because people are not very much in the habit of sharing good news. They're much more likely to share the not great stuff.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. We, for the last couple of years, the MACPA has been
working on this kind of business operating system called EOS, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with or not.
Yeah, but I do not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the tenets of that is, I mean, anytime you're getting together for a meeting of any sort, first agenda item for the meeting is what they call a check-in. And the check-in is, it's simply good news. Just once around the table, everybody says something that's good personally and something that's good professionally. And it just kind of gets the meeting started on a positive note, you know? Yeah. And I think it's been helpful, and it's at least a fun way of getting things started, you know? So.
Well, and quite literally that changes the chemistry, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about good things, when we share in other people's good news, we're actually changing our chemistry. You can feel the shift in a room, even a virtual room, when that happens. So yeah, we use that too.
Yeah. Describe for us what it is that you do, this link between, you know, positivity and business results. Give mm-hmm. me the lowdown on that.
Yeah. So really the name, right, P-Link Leadership, really stands for this idea of fusing the disciplines of human nature, in particular positive psychology and neuroscience and behavioral science, with the practice of leadership, right? This idea that we can create better outcomes with positive leadership, which seems pretty much straightforward until you think about how long organizations have been led using fear as a motivator. Mm-hmm. Right? And it can be fear of the individual nature, but also even back in the day, I mean, I can remember defining burning platforms when we were doing visioning, meaning getting an entire room together to define what they don't want mm-hmm. as the motivation, right, of what you want to move away from. Whereas positive leadership and P-Link leadership is all about clarifying what you do want, what you want to move towards. And that means as an individual leader, you're paying attention to that as a team and as an organization. So back to your first question, you know, what we just talked about was how we might do positive leadership with a group, right? Like a check-in. We call that connection before content, but also individually. So I am very aware of my thought processes. And when I start to feel myself downward spiral, you know, which can happen when you have a few things that happen all in a row, right? Your computer is acting weird. You have to reboot it. You're running late for a meeting. You stub your toe. All of a sudden, you're in a downward spiral, right? Great. This is the kind of day I'm going to have. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I notice that I am doing that, then I actually turn that around, you know, it's just literally a version of self-coaching, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, I am noticing that I'm collecting evidence for why this is going to be a bad day. So let me find three good things. Mm-hmm. What are three things that are going in my way? Because it's just so easy to notice and give more weight to the stuff that doesn't. So positive leadership is about turning that whole paradigm on its head and being really thoughtful and strategic about the way you're being a positive leader versus what some people or critics would think of as sort of Pollyanna.
Let's get to that question of Pollyanna here for a second, because mm-hmm. I personally know a few people, more than a few probably, who would say that this positivity stuff is, you know, a load of touchy-feely nonsense.
Yeah.
Why are they wrong?
Oh, they're so wrong. And I just wait. I wait for the day when it becomes so commonplace. So here's why they're wrong is the touchy-feely. So let's kind of back up for a minute. Like, human beings are effectively three operating systems, right? That mm-hmm. have interplay with each other, just like a suite of software. So we have our cognitive operating system, we have our emotional operating system, and we have our physical operating system. And those three things work together. We already know they work together, right? Because we know that what we think has an impact on how we feel, and how we feel impacts our behavior. Mm-hmm. Like, we've known that for a while, because the marketing discipline is based around helping people feel so that they take action.
Yep.
What we haven't really thought about is, you know, if you think about it, like the proverbial three-legged stool, We have really well-developed norms and practices and infrastructure to support the development of the cognitive system, right? That's our educational system. Even going all the way through to continuing education and ongoing, right? We have really well-developed norms and infrastructure for developing the physical system. We know how to keep it healthy. We know what the best practices are. We even have places where you can go to get the exercise if you're not getting them in the daily course of your life. But the third leg of the stool, the emotional leg of the stool, which also has tons of intelligence, is totally not developed past grade school. We make the gigantic assumption that people are developing that on their own. But we have not been. It's very immature relative to the two other legs, which is why we get a lot of reactive leadership. It's like a wobbly stool, right? So all we have to do is think about what happens when you think about the three systems. If you are physically injured or ill, what do you notice changes in your thinking, Bill? What would you say? If you're physically injured or ill, or even jet lagged, what changes in your thinking?
Yeah, I'm run down, I'm tired, which means I'm not sharp. I'm probably not happy. And that mood and that type of feeling is going to impact, I think, the work that I do. I think that's probably the first thing that I would notice.
Well, and actually what you just described is impacts in both the cognitive and the emotional, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not happy. I'm lacking in motivation. My thinking is not sharp, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just with the physical leg, like if you're injured or jet lagged or sick. So then the other way you can go is think about if the emotional leg of the stool gets hit, right? You learn some sad news. You have a fight with somebody you love or a disagreement. You know, what changes about your physical energy and your thinking? So this is a very easy way to demonstrate in our known experience how these three things work together. And the fact that we are just not very aware of our emotions, what people call touchy-feely, means that we're basically have built in a consequence to our operating system. It's like having old software, right? We've got this one system that hasn't been updated, so it changes the whole human being. Mm-hmm. And so when that emotional system isn't evolved, people don't know what they're feeling. They don't know how to describe it accurately. They might not even be aware they are feeling it, but meanwhile, it's driving behavior and decision-making.
That almost sounds like you are answering my next question, which is it's getting back to everything that's happening around us right now, right? I'm pandemic, mm-hmm. racial strife, politics, the upcoming elections, and how all of that is impacting our work and our businesses. Is it that third leg that you're talking about here where that type of stuff crosses over to actually have an impact on work that may not be related to any of those things, but it's still having that impact?
So yeah, I mean, so the short answer is yes. If you pull up to an aggregated view of that, right? Mm-hmm. So the short answer is that from a pandemic point of view, people are being challenged physically, emotionally, and intellectually, right? So we're in, at least in Maryland, this, you know, March 13th, I think was the first day of the stay at home. Mm-hmm. So we're moving into almost our fifth month,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So it's really, there's a whole process that's showing up physically. Like a lot of people are, because we do coaching, we hear lots of different people's stories, you know, describing sort of a feeling of fatigue and getting worn down. And it's just a combination of things, you know, it being harder to exercise, it being harder to process all the emotions that people are feeling that, again, they don't have a whole lot of ability to describe the complexity of the emotions inside the house, right? Mm-hmm. When people are work from home, study from home, the complexity of emotions in the workplace. Sometimes I think about it when you're traveling internationally and you don't speak the language, in the beginning, everything is super fun and interesting. And then you hit the stage where it's just hard. Like everything is harder than you're used to it being. Yep. And there's a fatigue that sets in. So it's like that. So that's as the physical piece of it. Kind of at the national dialogue level, I think you're seeing a lot of reactive leadership. Mm-hmm. You just, and by reactive, it means I'm having a reaction instead of a response. My reaction is in threat-based and problem-oriented, and it's about moving away from what I don't want. And I'm using fear to inspire. A response is when I am awake to and aware of what's going on for me and the larger environment I am in, and I'm choosing a response that pursues an opportunity and engages other people around me, not out of fear, but out of opportunity and motivation. You know, sometimes we call that future prospecting. So we have a percentage of the population that, you know, you might think of as kind of like early adopters who, and beginning in my optimistic frame to be kind of tapping into the early majority where they're like, oh, okay. So, you know, my complexity of mind does not match the complexity of the environment I'm operating in. There's a gap. Mm-hmm. So I only have two choices. One is try to bend reality to my will. Or the other is I speed up my adaptation, right? I develop my own complexity of mind. And what I mean by complexity of mind is I'm aware of and I can manage all my emotions, not just the good ones, right? I can tolerate. I'm aware of and I can hold things that seem to be paradoxically untrue, right? I can hold dual realities. Mm-hmm. Right? I can support Black Lives Matter and I can also be pro-police. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? I can be pro-police and also be anti-police brutality.
Mm-hmm. How do we start building that muscle? Because it seems like, you know, I know a lot of folks would likely agree with this, a very difficult thing to do. Most of us aren't either won't or can't get there. It seems like today there's this problem where we've gotten comfortable with surrounding ourselves with like-minded folks and have closed ourselves off to other points of view and are perfectly okay with that. How do we start to break out of that bubble and build that intentional muscle?
Yeah. So I think that there is a percentage of the people that like what you've described, but I would also say there's a larger percentage than there ever has been of people who are willing to try. Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about here is this whole idea of adaptation. Right. So the actual definition of adaptation is to become better suited to our environment. So we look at that in the animal kingdom all the time. We have a pretty clear identification of the animals that are adapting and the ones that are not. And the biggest indication of the ones that are not is their numbers are dwindling. Mm. Right. So when you think about that from a people perspective, like we are the fastest evolving species on the planet. And yet structurally, we're pretty much the same as we have been for 150,000 years. So what's evolving, right? It's consciousness. It's the things that we used to think were okay 200 years ago are not okay now. And in fact, they're so not okay, we can't even quite imagine how we got there in the first place. Mm-hmm. Right? So the consciousness is evolving. And now add to that, we're the only creature on the planet that we know of that can decide to decide. Meaning we get to decide whether we adapt or not. So to come back around to your question, the first step in that is to notice that you're ill-suited to your environment. And that as much as you're wanting to make the environment different, it is what it is. So that's the first like awakening, right? Which is that if I want things to change, I need to change.
Right.
And if I need to change, then what does that mean needs to change? So the first place people go is behaviors. But changing behaviors without changing underlying mindsets is not sustainable, right? We can hold on to it for a little while, kind of think about it like white knuckle. But as soon as our resources get scarce, we revert, right? And by resources get scarce, I mean our health gets compromised, we're tired, money gets tight, all the things that put us into a protectionary place. So the next step, once you realize that you want to be in charge of your own adaptation, right, really get behind the wheel of your life, means that you have to kind of look at your mindsets and specifically thoughts and beliefs. And I make the differentiation there because as a coach, when you're working with somebody's thinking, it's pretty easy to shift it. Like you can make a logical appeal and be able to show like, hey, here's how this plays out. And somebody can have like that instant epiphany when they realize the frame in which they've been looking at something changes. Yep. Beliefs are entirely different. Beliefs have moral importance attached to them. They have been around for a long time, sometimes generations. Sometimes they're beliefs that are like baked into an organizational culture. And so it really is hard to shift beliefs. And that's where we have to start to look and be able to hold our certainty out long enough that we can evaluate our beliefs and ask ourselves, are they true? And even if they are true, are they still serving me well in today's environment? Right? So, for example, I had a belief that I was not racist and that that was enough. It wasn't until I started looking at that from another perspective that I realized that's not enough. That's like passive. Right. And so to be active anti-racist means that I am paying attention to and evaluating things through a different lens than my own self-identity. That's a big shift from a belief perspective. And to get there, you have to be able to suspend any defensiveness you have or certainty about not being a racist, and that's enough. Right?
It's it strikes me as something that a lot of folks would find very difficult to do, that once you've you almost want to hold on to those beliefs for dear life. We very rarely let go of something that we have determined has come to define us. Mm-hmm. We tend to double down on that stuff. And that strikes me as an emotional skill that takes some work to develop.
Practice. I think it's practice. So we know for sure, right? We know that people develop. Like we know we have the adult development theory. We know that they develop. And the leadership circle is a model that we use, a 360 I really like. And they define between reactive and creative, right? So mm-hmm. about 70% of the population is on the journey from reactive, which, like I said earlier, is very me-focused, very protectionary, very threat-focused, to creative. So, you know, and just like any adoption curve, there's going to be those that are moving way early, those that are the early majority, and then those are the late majority, and then the laggards, right? So when we're teaching in our courses, our leadership development courses, we really can see, like in the first 15 minutes, Bill, you can see the adapters who are super interested and they understand, like, I'm going to take what works for me and leave the rest versus feeling like I have to, you know, drink the Kool-Aid or adopt every aspect of the model. Mm-hmm. The skeptics, what we think of as healthy skeptics, which sounds like curiosity, mm-hmm. what we would consider the rigid skeptics, which sounds like certainty and doubt, right? So it's like, well, maybe, but I'm not, you know, prove it to me.
Right.
And then the resistors with a capital R. Mm-hmm. So the resistors with a capital R and Sinek's adoption curve are the laggards, right? They're the ones who are like, nope, I'm not going, and there's nothing you can do to make me go there, and I'll just wait for the world to circle back to where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that is that, you know, like they take a ton of energy, but it's not a good ROI to invest there. You really. So I guess what I'm saying is there's a bigger percentage than one might believe by just reading social media feeds or the comments on the articles that get published. There is a bigger percentage of people who really are doing the work. Really thinking about how they're showing up, and if they're showing up, how they want to be, and understanding that if they want things to change, they need to change.
How are great leaders doing that? I mean, you work with a lot of leadership teams. How are the really good ones doing that, rising above that, and getting the rest of us to rise above that as well?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, they're modeling it. So it doesn't work if they're not modeling it, right? So a team, like a team cannot outperform the consciousness of its leadership. So think about if you had a bunch of, tech savvy people on your team, millennial or otherwise, and COVID-19 hit and they were like, boss, like, we've got this. Like, we know how to go completely paperless, right? We know how to change our phone system. We know how to work from home. We can do all of that. But you have a boss who says, there is absolutely no business like face-to-face, and that we are, you know, going to lose money if we go 100% virtual. So we're just going to band-aid this for right now until we can get back to normal. So that leader's not modeling it. What that leader is modeling is mitigating risk, right? Really trying to mitigate any risk by getting out in front and trying new things. And they are, even if they had a recruiting strategy to go out and hire tech savvy people of any generation, they're actually like interfering with their own success, right? Because of their mindset, which is that it's, I have to get us back to normal. I have to get us back to work, even though everybody's been working,
right?
But that's their model, right? So when we see leaders who do this well, they model it really well. They're willing to take risks. They're willing to question their own beliefs. They're willing to say, I don't know. They are willing to model vulnerability. And what we mean by that is relational vulnerability. You know, we do a lot of work in the Dare to Lead of Dr. Brené Brown, really teaching that is an emotional development course. It is the psychology of leadership, right? Mm-hmm. Which is not a new thing. Like, I mean, I have a definition of leadership from the Royal Geographic Society's Handbook for Expeditions, and human psychology is their third tenet. I mean, we just forgot it for a long time,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So they're modeling it. They are instituting new things all the time. They are paying attention to the emotional tenor of the organization. They're checking in with people on fears and feelings. They're not afraid of having difficult conversations. They wade right into those conversations. There's no back channeling. There's no meeting after the meeting. If they sense resistance or friction in the organization, they open up that conversation about how to dissolve it. You know, it's like in 1,000 tiny decisions.
Yeah, and is this like a new or missing competency that we're going to need going forward, or are you starting to see it already emerge in the leaders of today, I don't know if this is something that you can teach or not, but I'm just kind of wondering what skills you think the great leaders of today and tomorrow are going to need to have,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of us too. What are the kind of business competencies related to all this that we're going to have to work on?
So I'm going to change my response is going to change your question a little bit.
Okay.
So at P-Link, within our group of coaches, we talk about three C's of leadership, right? So competency, character, and consciousness.
Okay.
And competency has long been the realm of leadership development. It's the skills, right? But that's table stakes. It is like what will get you hired. You need to know how to do it. And then you need to be able to build your skills. And you can go into most continuing education providers and find the courses you need to either add or enhance your competencies. Then a few years ago, we decided as a country that actually we had been so focused on the skills development that we kind of let the character piece fall by the wayside and we stopped emphasizing that. And as a result of that, we had some pretty big debacles, mm-hmm. right? The Air Force Academy had one that motivated them to create a leadership institute of character. Enron was a character issue. VW and Audi was a character issue. Wells Fargo was a character issue. Not exclusively, but played into it, right? Mm-hmm. So lots of organizations that have great posters on the walls, but no real heartfelt conversations around what are the behaviors we're actually talking about? Like what's okay and what's not okay? So that's that second piece. So sometimes we like to say, you know, competency will get you hired, but character or lack thereof is what gets you fired. The third piece, consciousness, is something that, you know, 7 years ago when we introduced the model and we're talking about it, nobody was talking about this in business at any type of scale, right? Consciousness was really something that people thought about in terms of mindfulness, and it was the domain of yogis and gurus. Mm-hmm. But consciousness means that you are awake to and aware of what's going on inside of you as well as what's going on around you. And it is the differentiator. We have to, as leaders, be able to recognize when the context we're in is changing faster than we are. And then we have to call on ourselves and our organizations to adapt. But back to our original conversation, you know where that knowledge comes in is your emotional system. Like you, that emotional system has to be mature enough to be able to recognize that the way in which you have always known yourself to be operating or the way in which you self-identify no longer fits in the environment. And we have to be able to let go of our own identities sometimes to be able to get the new one. And there's, you know, tons of idioms around that. People know this to be true. It's just harder. So we got to practice it. And there's kind of two ways to practice. One is to apprentice yourself to somebody, a leader who's already doing it, right? They're just further down the path. And by the way, nobody is doing this perfectly, right? So even the people who are a little bit further along because they were early adopters, they're still reading, they're still learning, they're still getting it wrong. But when they get it wrong, they get super interested in learning what could help them get it more right the next time, as opposed to being right. Mm-hmm. Right? And then, so one way, right, is it to apprentice yourself. And right now, it's super visible. If you're looking for a job, look for organizations that are doing well in this environment, mm-hmm. because they're adapting. Versus saying, we're just going to wait this out, or we're going to force our employees back into the old box. And because it's going to, you know, we'll get back to normal soon enough. So that's one way is to apprentice. Then the other way is to undertake your own sort of self coaching journey. And I would start with Dare to Lead. It's a leadership curriculum that's cutting across every major industry. Last year, we took over 1,000 people through 8 different industries through it. And it's one of the first curriculums I've seen in 25 years where the leadership teams are saying, teach us. Mm-hmm. A lot of times leadership teams bring us in and say, we're good, fix them.
Right.
Right. So they're saying, teach us. We want to understand this. And so that's a good place to start because it's really talking about something that we have not been talking about. Also, the leadership circle, is a great model, talks about reactive and creative, and Mastering Leadership is by Bob Anderson and Bill Adams. I had to think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. On the is also they are the founders of the Leadership Circle, but really talking about adult development theory and how that's showing up in leadership and this whole idea of creative and reactive.
So my first thought is I want to take all those courses like immediately. Mm-hmm. It sounds amazing. Where's like a great place to start with all of this, you know, emerging research and everything else that we've been talking about here for somebody who's, you know, brand new to this and wants to dip their toe in it? I mean, like, who are you reading? What resources are out there? Where would you suggest that where do you suggest we go for more information on this stuff?
Yep. First of all, what I would say is it's a new field, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about human psychology, early 1900s, I mean, for the first 75 to 100 years, like, we just studied how the human psychology gets injured, right? Injuries to the psyche. And it wasn't until the late 1990s when Martin Seligman introduced positive psychology that we were like, oh, like, there's this whole other side of the continuum here that we've just sort of been leaving up to happenstance. But actually, we can impact that. So that's called well-suffering, right? Mm-hmm. So if mm-hmm. you think about zero, just arbitrary continuum, minus 10 to plus 10, zero being neutral. Zero to minus 10 is the domain of traditional psychology. Zero to plus 10 is the domain of well-suffering and coaching, right? So well-suffering is like, hey, I'm a plus one, plus two on that scale. I think I could be doing so much better. Mm-hmm. Like, I just have this sense. So my point in that is that there's no definitive text. I'm going to give you some ideas. But what I would say is, if you're interested in it, just start reading across a broad cross-section and be noticing where the theories are overlapping, mm-hmm. right? So when you see different people from completely different disciplines or research bodies coming to the same conclusions, then I think you can put some confidence in the finding. And then practice it and see if it makes a difference for you. Right? I mean, you have to find out what makes a difference for you. So, and all of this is about self-coaching, right? You can go out and get a coach for sure. And that's super helpful, right? Because you're thinking out loud with somebody, and you also want to learn how to self-coach. And so what I would say is anything that would identify itself on a literature search as positive psychology is a great place to start, mm-hmm. right? So the happiness hypothesis by Jonathan Haidt is an excellent, excellent read. I think that you can think about, I'm just looking at my bookcase here. The authors I would be paying attention to are Martin Seligman, Barbara Fredrickson, Sonia Lubomirsky, Fred Kaufman, he wrote The Conscious Leader. So they are writing in similar veins, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, how do we really intervene on behalf of ourselves? Anything you can find on Dare to Lead, if you just Google or you just go to daretolead.com, there is a hub with all kinds of free resources. There's also a Netflix special that she did, a 50-minute sort of keynote, if you will. And I think the popularity of her TED Talk in 2014 speaks for itself, right? Yeah, 50 million views. Like, she just hit something. The Neuro Leadership Institute also is a great place to watch and follow. Harvard Business Review publishes articles almost monthly on all the aspects of the psychology of leadership and human behavior. And so really, if you're wanting to take this on for your own journey or because you have responsibility for developing other people, that, by the way, is another mindset shift Bill, right? Mm-hmm. Leaders of the past would say they manage people. Different leaders of the future that have that differentiating skill understand they manage work and they develop people. Mm-hmm. But that development agenda does not belong to HR. It belongs to them. Mm-hmm. And that HR supports that, or LOD supports that learning and organizational development. So there's videos, there's books, there's podcasts out there to help you think about how you want to evolve this. And you know you're on the right track if what you're listening to is kind of pissing you off. Right? Because you want, when something challenges your beliefs or the way you thought the world was, the first response to that is resistance and a little bit of anger, right?
Right. No defensiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really good. That's a clue to get curious.
That's great. That's great advice. You know, going back to that notion of development, who was it? It's another kind of thought leader in the leadership space that Tom and I have been following for a while. His name is Emmanuel Gobio, but mm-hmm. he said something that's always stuck with me that you know, one thing that all great leaders do is that they ask, with everything that they do, they ask themselves, have I made my people feel stronger and more capable? And that, I think, speaks directly to what you're talking about with this notion of development, right? It's not about managing people. It's about helping them grow.
Yeah. And the mantra that I've adopted is if somebody that is on my team is not doing what I need them to do, then that's my problem, not theirs. Mm-hmm. Meaning it's on me as a leader to decide how can I meet them where they're at and help them to move forward in some way versus the all too easy trap of blaming them or deciding, you know, that they can't be developed.
How are you staying positive these days?
Yeah. So one thing I want to add on the book thing is I tend to like to read research. There's kind of two, you can read the research, like some of the scientists that I just rolled out are the ones doing the original research and writing. And then there are a sort of category of authors who I think are doing a good job taking that research and putting that into a more mainstream version. So, you know, Dan Pink does that. Gretchen Rubin does that. Sometimes I think Malcolm Gladwell does a good job of that. So I would just say for people listening, you know, think about what you like to read. Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to how am I keeping myself positive? I am beginning to get very specific about what actually makes a difference in my day. So for example, I like to have 90 minutes in the morning before my first have to. So a have to being like, you know, my first client call, my first meeting, external meeting, whatever. So I like to have a 90 minutes. I know that's my threshold. So if I have more, great. But if I have less, it's not a great way for me to start the day. I like to have 4.5 hours at the end of the day. I don't always get there. But 4.5 hours is about my threshold for how much time I want to have to be able to make dinner with my family and have dinner with my family and then have a little bit of unstructured time after dinner before it's time for bed. Mm-hmm. I know that if I get outside, even for 20 minutes, being outside for 20 minutes can make the difference between having a good day and not having a good day. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I are being very intentional about planning things in that we can do as a family that are safe and also truly get us away together, right? Because we all work from home. Well, Mike goes in and out, but the kids and I are home 24/7. I work, I have my home office. So for example, one of the things we did this year was get some kayaks. Because Maryland has some amazing water trails and mm-hmm. you can get out there pretty much for free and spend the day and you're not getting on any, you know, public transportation. And I also, like I said, I do a lot of self-coaching. I mean, I get down in the dumps. There are times when I'm like, I am tired. This is a heavy load. You know, I coach 5 clients in a day, and I'm not only carrying my own stories, but also theirs. And so I do self-coaching to sort of say, what do I need right now? Or if I was going to savor something really positive and expand that experience, how could I do that? So I share good news. I use gratitude, which is a big deal for me. I mean, it's one of my top values anyway, but it's a real plus up all the time.
It's all very intentional. So many of us just kind of take things as it comes, right? But you've got to be intentional about this type of stuff.
That's the difference, mm-hmm. right? So when we talk about consciousness, that's the difference, is intentional. I mean, I remember I was 37 when I first realized what the internal dialogue was like in my mind. Mm. Right. I was really, I mean, for a long time up until then, I just sort of thought stuff happened to me as opposed to realizing like that I could be the author of my own life, meaning stuff does happen to us, but we have the choice about how we respond. And so the whole notion of positive leadership is, in order to be able to future prospect, meaning to be able to find the opportunities in the future, no matter how ambiguous it looks, and to be able to rally the courage from yourself and the people that you lead to go after those, you must be intentional about cultivating that frame of mind and that emotional state. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you notice that you're not, then you need to stop and ask yourself, what do I need? And what's the fastest way to get that? So like through MACPA's Leadership Academy, we teach the theory of well-being, PERMA. And one of the things in that theory is identifying what your top 3 positive emotions are to feel, which most people don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I've asked an executive, what's your favorite positive emotion to feel? And the answer was winning a tennis game, which is not an emotion.
Right, right.
Right? So, you know, what are your 3 most positive feelings to feel? And what gets them to you most dependably? Mm-hmm. So like awe is one of my favorites. And getting outside into big open space generates awe for me. Anticipation is another one. And that's one I've had to be really intentional about, because all the things we typically anticipate got erased off the calendar with COVID-19.
That's a fact.
Right? So we are having to be like, oh, how can we totally change the way in which we're going about anticipating?
Wow. This has been fantastic, Gretchen. I could talk to you about this stuff all day long, and I won't. I've already taken up too much of your time, but it's been a joy talking to you about this, and let's do it again soon. Thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure.
Wow, I needed that. Good stuff and great insights and advice from Gretchen Pisano, co-founder and CEO of P-Link Leadership. You can learn more, rather, at plinkleadership.com. That's the letter P-L-I-N-K, leadership.com. Also, check out positivityratio.com. This is one of Barbara Fredrickson's sites. You can go there and take a kind of a self-assessment test to find out what your positivity ratio is right now. Again, positivityratio.com. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. Here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now. You can learn them too by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. Thanks so much for being here, guys. Have a great week. Talk to you again soon.